Hi, and welcome to Power of 10, a podcast about design operating at many levels, zooming out from thoughtful detail through to organizational transformation and onto changes in society and the world. My name is Andy Pullane. I'm a service design and innovation consultant, coach, trainer, and writer. My guest today is Nir Hindi, founder of The Artian, a transdisciplinary training company committed to nurturing an artistic mindset in the business environment, and host of The Artian podcast. Nir works with a wide range of organizations and has gained an equally large number of accolades, including being chosen as one of the 100 experts of COTEC, an organization for promoting innovation in Spain, chaired by no less than Felipe VI, the Spanish king. Nir says he has for years believed in the power of art to derive originality and novelty in business, but was searching for the how until he discovered the way artists think, work, and create, and more importantly, why it's relevant to business. Since then, Nir has been evangelizing the concept of the art mindset in business, a mindset he believes is necessary for the future of organizations. Nir, welcome to Power of 10.
Thank you, Andy. That's such a generous introduction.
Well, it's well deserved. So let's start with, where did this first sort of insight come from? Where did you first start thinking, hang on, so in the introductory episode of The Artian on your podcast, you talk about this idea of most people consider art in terms of objects, but you had this kind of moment of sort of insight of, no, but this is something else, and it's a way of thinking about the world, and that this could really apply to business. How did that start?
I think it's kind of a development. It wasn't overnight. Since my childhood, I had two great passions, entrepreneurship and art. But as you know, society channels us to choose. And I chose to go to the world of business, and I studied economics and web technology and started my own thing. But at the same time, I got involved with art. I started to get interested in art again. And I met many artists that slowly became my friends. And back then, I already had my own companies. And when we used to meet each other, they used to ask me questions that I said, but how come they think about it that way? It's like, artists, they don't understand business. And just like many, I guess, of listeners, that's kind of the thought that I had. But that's also what intrigued my curiosity. I asked myself, but artists don't understand business. So how come they come with those questions? And I embarked on a journey to try to understand how art influences business. And that's what kind of led me into this journey of understanding the artistic mindset. And as you mentioned, my biggest realization after a few years was that art is not an object. We tend to think about art as a painting, as a song, as a book, as a movie. But it is the outcome of the thinking process. And the moment you understand that art is a mentality, then a lot of avenues open and you can actually understand how it's necessary to have it in business.
So one of the other things is that art and being an artist is obviously often thought of in terms of the craft, right? The skill of painting, the skill of sculpting or whatever it is. That changed in the rise of modern and contemporary art, that it was much more around the thinking behind things. And in some cases, there are fabricators who make the objects, but it's the kind of the idea for it in the first place. You know, much to sometimes it's been sort of heavily criticized, but that's not art, that's just some dots on a wall or whatever it is. So, you know, you went and you spoke to kind of many artists, you also spoke to a lot of people in business. Yeah. What was the sort of fundamental, you sort of talked about they see the world in a different way. In what way did they see the world differently?
Listen, I think that artists lead with questions. That's one of the things that I see. They are always posing and formulating questions. It's never about accepting the status quo as is. So that's by itself already kind of invite kind of reflection, that they ask you those thorough questions. And let me give you an example. I just interviewed a few weeks ago an artist named Lauren McCarthy. And Lauren McCarthy actually she's interested a lot in AI and surveillance and sound devices like Alexa. And one of the things she asked herself is that we bringing those devices into our home without really understanding and asking the right questions. So what did she do? She actually created a project of her own. She called it Lauren. And basically, she sent cameras to your home with microphones and everything. She installed it in your home and she became a human Alexa. And you tell her, Lauren, I want to find a restaurant for tonight, etc. Now, when you suddenly understand that there is a human behind it, people were more cautious. And one of the persons she actually shared was actually thinking about bringing Alexa, but he wanted to try it. So by this work, I think Lorraine makes us think about these devices that we think are harmless, but actually you bring a company into your home, into your living home, when you have your children, your personal space. So this is kind of one example that I think that artists are very good at and relevant to business and influence businesses, that artists lead with question. They don't take the status quo as is, which we often, what we say, we need an innovation.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can discuss why I think artists are the people to go to when it comes to innovation.
So I can hear all the designers listening to this podcast go, well, that's what we do in design too. We explore the problem space. We ask the why, the five whys, the whys behind the why. And, you know, arguably there's critical design offs and design fictions that sort of live in that space that we were just talking about, actually. But in what way, I don't really want, well, not yet want to ask the difference between art and design, but in what way do they question the world differently or question the problem space differently, do you think?
I'll tell you something. I mean, art, in many ways, it's human, okay? And it's made by human for human. But artists are not creating artworks for you as the individual. It's like Rich Gold, and I guess people are familiar with his book, The Planetude. He's the one that actually he was an artist, a designer, engineer, inventor, and he's the one that founded the Artist in Residence program in Xerox Park, Palo Alto Research Center in the 90s, was a legendary Artist in Residence program. And he defined it very, very nicely. He said, artists will paint a painting and ask herself, do I like it? Yes or no? A designer will paint a painting and ask the user, do you like it? Yes or no? And I think it's kind of one example that, at least for me, communicate the differences. It's they are motivated by a question that doesn't necessarily have end result in a way.
Yeah. And so this, I think, is one of the fundamental differences. And I agree. I mean, I've also taught and worked in sort of art and design in different contexts. And, you know, it's most obvious in something like visual design, where, you know, in general, a graphic designer is working to communicate on behalf of someone else. And an artist is usually saying, here's an interesting way of seeing the world, or I see the world in this way, or here's a thing I've made that's going to help you see the world in a different way.
Exactly.
You know, I think kind of designers do it in a sense, but I think they're pushed around a lot more in the sense of there's many more constraints quite often in what they can do. And I often talk about the sort of balance between humility and ego. I think to be a designer, you have to have a certain amount of ego to kind of manifest the same thing that an artist has to have, you know, to manifest something in the world and say, I've made a thing. Look at the thing I've made. And yet, you know, the humility to take critique, to take direction, criticism, and kind of iterate multiple times. Now, obviously, artists do that too, but they're their own critic mostly in that, you know, there is always the escape hatch of an artist. If someone says, well, this is a load of rubbish, and you go, we just don't understand it, or I don't care.
Yeah. Right?
And that's the difference. They can say, I don't care, in the way that a designer maybe can't. You've been giving workshops and doing development work with business people, right?
Yeah.
I'm really, really interested in what you bring to those, because there's obviously like a zillion design thinking workshops and stuff. So you've talked about the kind of renaissance, a sort of birth of Renaissance thinking, or a return to Renaissance thinking. And you've written a book about it, actually, of a new paradigm in management. So I'm really interested in what you bring to those sessions, what you actually get those people to do, and what kind of people they are, and what the response has been.
It's a great question. And I'll tell you something. I think that what I try to do is not what to make people do. I want to make people think. You know, for so many years, we got used to separate those disciplines. Is when you think about entrepreneur, you don't think about art graduate. I mean, today is much more common to see the design. But think about it, designers that start in companies. But you don't think about artists as people that can start companies. And then you have companies like Airbnb, Brian Chesky and Joe Gebbia. They study in industrial design, but Brian Chesky used to paint a lot, and he was actually a kind of a, I think if I remember correctly, even won a competition when he was 16 or 17 in painting around the US. When you look at Snapchat, Steven Spiegel went to art school. When you look at Canva, when you look at even Square, Jim McKelvey, the co-founder of Square, he studied engineering, yes, but he's also doing art since he was in the in school.
It's also Pinterest, I think, aren't they founders?
Yeah, Pinterest also, yeah. And yeah. YouTube, one of the co-founder of YouTube, etc. So when you think about it, you don't think that artists can actually create companies, but I think it goes to one misconception that maybe it's worth touching. Often when I say artists, people immediately imagining a painter in the studio.
Yeah.
But artists are more than painters. Artists, I always say that those are very curious people that always interested in what is available for them. And one of them is obviously technologies. And there is a great examples for invention and innovations that we are using today that was invented by artists or collaboration of artist engineers. To give you one example, in the 70s, there was the legendary program Experiments in Art and Technology. They just brought it to life 5 years ago. I had a conversation with the head of the current module of it. But one of the things they wanted to do in Expo 1970 is that to cover the pavilion of Pepsi that contracted this group. And they invited an artist, and she's a fog artist. And she said, we need to, and until the 70s, fog could have been produced only in a chemical process. And she insisted that it should be environmental. So together with an engineer, she developed a water-based electricity, a fog producer, that today is being used in manufacturing, in agriculture, and in cooling rooms, etc. That's one example. I can give you many more. So going back to your question, when I come to the businesses, I try to make them think, not necessarily immediately do, because business is so focused on execution that sometimes we don't stop to think. And what I try to make them think about is if the solution that we are taking or the way that we are taking, is that the right one? The people that we are hiring, are they the right people? Because if CV was the best recipe for success, so every company that hires someone will be a match, 100 match. Basically, the Tinder of the world for employees. but it's not that way. So, and it doesn't mean that if the world becomes so complex, I mean, it's important to have specialization, but you have to create the bridges for the generalist and not to undermine or undervalue the generalist, because that's exactly what happened in the Renaissance. You had Filippo Brunelleschi, the one that built the dome and rediscovered the linear perspective that changed science, architecture, and obviously art. But he was an engineer, a sculptor, a goldsmith, a ship designer. So
there's a, I know there's a sort of conversation or there's a, you know, study of Renaissance people, and that was a kind of period of time where it was possible to know, not know everything, but know a lot about a lot. And now that the world has become so much more complex, that's just going to be impossible anymore to be there. And, you know, I can't remember, as if I was trying to think of the date, but I'm sure something I read or something around sort of mid-18th century was the last point where you could sort of say, I kind of know about everything. So what's your response to this idea of, yes, it's a really nice idea, but, you know, now the world's too complex and we need specialists to deal with that complexity. That's a common response to this.
Listen, in my own opinion, Renaissance thinking is an approach. It's not about knowing everything. It's about, are you saying to yourself, I want to know everything I know about finance in the industry of insurance? That's it? That's how you define your life? Not, God forbidden, that I'm not saying that working in finance insurance is not good. It's just that I'm saying, for me, Renaissance thinking is an approach. It's about the ability to be curious about life and ask questions and find inspiration in other disciplines, and not narrowing the way we think, the people we interact with, and the environment we work with to the same homogeneous way of thinking, because that's what happens. I would have loved to see more business programs that actually will bring artists to speak about leadership. Because for me, we had an example in January 2021. The world, and especially the US, is so divided. And then you had 22-year-old poet going on stage, Amanda Gorman, and capture the heart of people, of millions of people. And she doesn't understand anything about business, and probably she doesn't understand anything about politics, but she understands people.
Yeah.
And I think we can learn so much from her, how she communicates. Every time in the business world, we talk about vision and mission. But what does it mean? Ask the people in the one that enter to the door all every day. Do they really understand your vision? Are they buying into your vision? And I think there is much more opportunity for cross-pollination that we are missing. So for me, the main message, Renaissance thinking is an approach in life. How do you decide to educate yourself? Because everyone talk with me about education system. Education system is one thing, but education is something much more wide, because you can educate yourself. You get education from your parents, from your friends. And I was lucky enough that, you know, I was surrounded by different influences that made me ask questions and be curious to try and learn more. I'm obviously more generalist than a specialist. I'm not saying that we don't need specialization. If I have a heart problem, I would like to have a specialized doctor working on me in that sense. But I think it's also one thing that on a personal level, I think your life will be much more interesting when you have different areas of interest.
I mean, one of the ways of creating that cross-pollination is artists in residence programs that you've written about too, which is, and you've spoken to people in those. And, you know, there's places like Adobe and IBM and you know, Microsoft, Google.
Many.
Many have artists in residence programs. You know, those can often end up being, here's a bit of sort of money and it's a bit of a philanthropic thing of, so we could say we've got an artist in residence, but, but that stuff doesn't really kind of flow into the organization in any meaningful way. Have you spoken to anyone, or do you have any examples where that has actually kind of flowed into the organization, the sort of host organization, in a meaningful way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the example that come to mind is obviously for me is Planet. And Planet today is an imaging company. They have, I think, more than 250 satellites orbiting around Earth. And they are the only company in the world taking images of Earth every day. And Planet, It's a great example, because when they were 24 people as a startup, they already contracted my friend Forrest Stern as the artist in residence. And I did a podcast with him and seven more of his colleagues. You see how it influences the culture. So one example is that how you can actually create sense of community. So not only that, one of the things they did, they created art evenings with the employees and their kids, and the kids draw a painting that later go being engraved into the satellites. Every employee had their own quote, and that goes on the satellite. How many employees can say that I have a satellite in space with my quote?
Nice,
that's a great conversation start. So it's great dynamic in the environment. And what Planet, I think, did smartly is that Forrest set, basically his desk was in the center of the main room. So when you go to the kitchen, when you go to get coffee, when you see him working, and he started to invite other artists. So there was a sense of creation. And when you're listening to the scientists speaking about how suddenly they saw their own work differently because they interacted with the artist that showed them their own self differently, it's amazing. You see people that are fulfilled. And I'm not saying it's easy, because to have a successful artist in residence, you need an excellent translator, someone that will be able to speak to the artist and speak to the business functions. And you will need to have management support. And then we can speak about Dieter Rams as an example.
Go on then. Speak about Dieter Rams as an example.
You know, everyone talk about Apple, and I'm a big fan of Apple. But before Apple, there was Brown. And Brown was an amazing company. Just last week, I gave a talk about the management commitment for creativity, and I used Brown as the example. And Ervin Brown, the son of the founder, when he took over the company, he built himself around him a group of creative thinkers. The first one that he brought was art historian and a theater graduate, Dr. Ervin Eichler, that he led all the creative and culture aspects in Brown for the next 20, 30 years. And he had a sculptor that was responsible for the corporate identity, and you had a painter that was they did the logo, and you had the architects. So everyone was very, very, you know, coming from the world of arts and crafts. Now, when you listen to Dieter Rams, that humbly from my own perspective is probably the most influential designer of the 20th century. When you're listening to Rams, he never speaks about himself. He always speaks about the founders. And he says, I couldn't do it because I'm Dieter Rams. I could do it just because I had the support of the management. And I think managers don't understand how crucial they are when it comes to designing and shaping innovative and creative companies.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've often talked about leadership as being an enabler rather than kind of leader in the classic way. I feel like leadership sometimes is quite fetishized, and obviously kind of everyone wants to be a leader, but no one wants to be a follower. And so you've got a problem, right? Because to be a leader, you have to have followers. Whereas if you think of it in terms of being an enabler, well, you know, I want to be enabled to do the best things I can and all of those kinds of things. But it also has, you know, I talk about enablement because it also has the negative side of when you think about enabling an addict or enabling bad behavior. So leadership can, as an enabler, can go in both directions. So, you know, I think this idea of that's overlooked of, hey, you know, you can enable this rather than have to kind of control it and hold it. And one of, you know, you've talked about, you know, one of the ways of enabling people, or one of the things that people are often trying to do inside organizations, is improve communication, improve collaboration, all in the aid of innovation, that much kind of sought after abstract thing. Tell me about what an art intervention is instead of a sort of usual workshop.
Great question. I mean, I'll tell you what I try to do. One of the things that I think is crucial in innovation is observation. We are often being taught or asked, go outside, observe the client, observe how they behave, observe how they interact with the product. But I think we do one thing in the wrong way, is that we think that observation is a passive action. Observation is active action. And observation is something that you need to develop and hone and foster. Now, the culture doesn't allow us to develop observation, because you go on Instagram and you see 200 images in less than a minute. And you go on your street and you are on your phone and you don't observe the environment around you. So we are not trained to observe, and observation is not encouraged by the culture. So what I try to do is stop for a moment and I'll put an image on a screen, and then I'll ask, what do you see? And it's amazing how the more you ask, suddenly you see that you take more layers. Because it's amazing when you have an image on the screen, and then one person will say, I see a woman. And at the same time, someone will respond, what? No, it's a man. In this moment, it's a magic. Because they don't understand how can it be that they look at the same thing, but they see totally different things. Now, I use art to kind of foster and develop observation. Today, it's also, there is a big research that has been done in Yale that showed the scientific research behind it. But I think what I try to do always is to show example how observation take form in the world of business. And if you will allow me to tell a story, I think many, many people will connect that, I think, show observation and understanding client. So I don't know about you, but when I enter to the restroom, when I leave, even before COVID, I don't like to touch the handle. I prefer to do it with the paper. The thing is that many restrooms will put the trash a bit far, and the one that want to abuse you even more will put a trash that you need to actually press with your leg. So what do you do? You need to open with the handle. You need to open the trash. Basically, you are like a clown trying to juggle everything. And one day I enter a building and the trash was open next to the door. I didn't pay attention. But the day after, I came again and the same trash was open. And the day after, again. And I said, okay, that's not a mistake. So I went in each floor of the building. And in each floor, the trash was open in the same position. And then I realized that the cleaning person actually understood how people behave when they leave the restroom, and actually made it easier for them.
Yeah.
But that required actually observation to be able to do it. So
I mean, all of which there is to observe, to properly observe. You know, there's the quote from Yogi Berra, which is, you can see a lot by observing. I think that's what it is. You know, it requires time.
Totally.
You know, and taking time. And I think perhaps one of the things that, I was going to say sort of artistic luxury, you know, and some people talk about it in those terms, but, you know, is actually to take the time to properly look. And I think if you've ever done a drawing class, or, you know, a lot of it is not about the motor skills of drawing, which I think is what people, you know, to go right back to the beginning, it's not about those, that sort of, most people, anyone who can write or sign their name has got the kind of motor skills to be able to draw. Learning to draw is about learning to see, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, you've done a shockingly large number of podcasts with a frequency schedule that puts me to shame. What have you... Is there been a sort of any sort of meta lessons or things? You've spoken to lots and lots of different kinds of people, but are there any sort of meta lessons that we haven't already kind of talked about that you sort of can draw from that range of people that you've spoken to?
Maybe I will speak from the responses that I get, not necessarily from the speakers themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Because one of the things that, and I think this message kind of maybe summarize it all for me, that someone one day wrote me, please don't stop the podcast because it gives me hope. So
that's nice.
So that's, you know,
no pressure.
I think creativity is something natural for humans. The fact that we say to someone, you're not creative, or you are creative, you are not, it's kind of eliminating a basic human skill or attitude, because humans, that's what they do. they are operating in creative way, and you see it among kids. And I think that when you listen to people in this podcast that were able to connect the two and give it manifestation in what they do, you ask yourself, okay, what can I do about it for myself? Not that everyone needs to become an artist, but yeah. I think we can open ourselves to much more creative possibilities in the world.
It can be. Those early experiences can be incredibly stunting and damaging, I think. I mean, the opposite is true also for a lot of people who end up in art and design and creative industries, which with things like maths and stuff, which is, oh, you know, you're no good at maths. And actually, yeah. It's usually just haven't been taught it in an interesting way. And if you see someone who can talk about maths or engineering or technology or any of those other things, the sort of or business for that matter, in a way that is engaging and interesting, where they truly see it, I think it's the same mindset, actually. You can see the engagement, you can see the fascination in it. And a lot of people understand much more than they think. I don't think there's ever bad students as bad teachers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, listen, we're coming up to time. As you know, the podcast is named after this Ray and Charles Eames film called Powers of 10, about the relative size of things in the universe. The final question is always, what one small thing that's possibly overlooked or underrated, if it was rethought or reimagined, would have an outsized effect on the world?
One thing. Wow. That's
one small difficult. Thing.
One small thing. I think we take things for granted in this world. And I wish that people will be more grateful just for what we have. I know it sounds maybe cliche. It's just that I think that this year kind of reinforced it for me. And I think that if you are grateful for everything, so at least you have less to complain and actually value more and understand that, yeah, maybe this, it's not the best place that you should have been, but at least you are in this place and someone else. So for me, it's, and I think that changed the attitude. If you are grateful, it doesn't mean you need to accept everything in the world, because I want to see change, but appreciating and starting from that point, I'm grateful. How can I make it even better? So more people will be grateful.
That's a very good place to end. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those things that the take a moment to feel the sun on your face and smell the flowers. It's also the, and observe the world around you is the artistic mindset too.
Yeah, totally.
So where can people find you online?
They can go to our website, www.theartian.com, or just type, if you are looking for the podcast, Shaping Business Minds Through Art.
Excellent. And we'll put any other links, the social stuff and everything else in the show notes. Nia, thank you so much for being my guest on Power of 10.
Thank you.
As I'm sure you're aware, you've been listening to Power of 10. My name is Andy Pullane. You can find me at apullane on Twitter or pullane.com, where you can find more episodes and sign up for my newsletter, Doctor's Note. If you like the show, please take a moment to give it a rating on iTunes. It really helps others find us. And as always, get in touch if you have any comments, feedback, or suggestions for guests. All the links are in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.